is Faisal Pliqueta.
This is Joe Cole.
This is Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and you're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to another episode of the London is Blue podcast. As always, your host, Brandon, joined by my co-host, Nick and Dan. And gentlemen, stepping in for this one, it is the Sheffield United match review. We've got Joe Tweeds. Welcome back to the pod, Mr. Joe Tweeds.
It's a very nice intro there, Brandon. Thank you for that. Yeah, glad to be back.
Full name only.
Full name only.
Rolling out the red carpet. I mean, that's how we do here. It's a high member experience. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, doesn't really matter.
Where are you going with this?
Dan, welcome to the pod. You've had quite an interesting weekend and day. It's Super Bowl. As far as I'm concerned, you have the closest connection to the Super Bowl out of all of us on this podcast, because a few years back, you actually visited me when the Super Bowl was here in Minneapolis.
That's true. It's the 1 year out of three in a row where I could have gone to a Super Bowl, and I decided to go the one where the Patriots lost. It was perfect decision-making on my part.
God, just chef's kiss. Mm.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock, I'm sure, coming from Tampa to Minneapolis, and it was about negative 15 out that whole weekend. So good times. But yeah, it is Super Bowl Sunday, so we're jumping in right after the match, something we never do, Nick. But I think it'll be all right. We played Sheffield United, obviously the 20th ranked team in the Premier League, but we're going to have some fun stuff to cover anyways.
That is true. We genuinely cannot catch a break on teams not being in form, and Sheffield United had won 3 of 5 out of nowhere after having 2 points up until that point in the season. So they came at us today. Just they lack quality, which is good.
Yeah, thankfully. So before we get into the 3-word match review, this podcast is all about the Timo and Mason show, who really drove the attack today. Chelsea conceding our first goal under Tuchel. Thank you, surprise goal scorer, for that. And then obviously we can end it with a little speculation, play some fun. If Tuchel has finally found some favorites, what would be his starting lineup in a big game? We can start to, after a few matches, pick who we think his starting 11 is. But before we get to that, Dan, 3-word match review. Kudos to these people for the quick turnaround. You flipped up the bat signal and the people responded.
Yeah, you know, it's a record turnaround. We appreciate it. We've got a couple from Techie and Bearded Bunny with the VAR loyalty reward / points. You know, that was something that did come into effect here. Eric Muggle with the only Chelsea scores, which is very astute. Claire with the Mason Jar Sheffield. DC with the Werner Mount connection. Christoph with the Timo Blade Runner. And then Kaylin, just on the theme of the day, touchdown Tommy Tuchel.
Triple T.
Triple T.
The classic. I think Kaylin's broken the algorithm there. Dan, I guess we can lead it off with you, since this is your 3-word match review army. What did you have?
I went with Mason Tempers Blades.
Nice.
I like that.
All right. Nick, what was yours? Irrelevant reference.
Well, relevant reference to much of the world, except for health food fanatic Brandon Busby. I am a massive Game of Thrones fan, as is Dan. And if you remember, one of the best Littlefinger quotes of all time is, chaos is a ladder. Now, I cannot use 4 words, so I went chaos, colon, a ladder.
Wouldn't it be comma?
Nah.
Chaos, comma, a ladder?
You couldn't go apostrophe?
No. You couldn't on that. Potentially, Dan. Potentially. Let's get our Grammarly folks in here and make sure that I get my shit correct. Either way, chaos is a ladder, and it's a frenetic game and a frenetic table.
Well, piggybacking off that, I just said, you know what, we're climbing the ladder. I don't know if it's chaos or not, but the ladder is being climbed, and up we go to 5th place. Tweeds, what about you, sir?
I channeled my inner Ron Burgundy, and I've put, we're title contenders? ?
He'll literally read anything, ladies and gentlemen.
He'll literally read anything, yeah. No, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but yeah, given all the results around this, I thought I'd be a tiny bit positive, but yeah.
Dan, you're bringing it back. You going to say it?
The why not us?
No.
We could do why not us with a asterisk for top 4 finish.
2nd place FC. Why not us? All right. Well, before we get into the match review, huge growth in the Patreon community.
What's up?
We might, we might be getting close to needing to expand our boundaries. Idol Directory, Jordan, Sean, Steve, Thomas, thank you all so much for jumping in to the Discord chat. Dan, again, the people, you called for the podcast reviews, you received.
Yeah, 5-star Apple Podcast reviews from Claire's Daddy, 0825, and Bjorn S, both leaving wonderful reviews on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it. I think I saw a few more come in, but didn't make it in time for the script. But we will get you in the next review that we have, which is Barnsley in the middle of the week. So not too long to get some thanks, but leave a few more. It'd be great.
If only we had more matches to review.
Yeah, boy. A couple of housekeeping things. One, I posted in the Discord today, so I am a legend. You're welcome. I posted about our merch. I posted an "Am I the asshole for teasing merch too early?" Yes, correct. I scored YTA. Too early. Yep. So I posted about that, a merch update in there, sneaky little preview for those that are in there. Got a lot of responses on that. We had a great call with Blue Wire this week. Brandon and I were on just talking about future plans. A lot of exciting stuff happening there that we will share soon. But just note that we're working hard on stuff and may even have some sneaky stuff from Tweeds to share, too, coming up. So lots happening in the LIBP Plus universe. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that,
sure.
Paramount Plus. You fuckers.
Wait, and seriously? Disney Plus. That's a thing?
Paramount Plus? Yeah.
I can't keep up with it. It is. You know what? I definitely know that there's Peacock going on because, my gosh, did they plug that on the stream about 4,000 times. I'm still not the least bit interested in it. So wrong community. Anyways, let's go ahead and jump into this match review. It was Sheffield United and what we've dubbed on Discord the Gabriel Sheffield Derby, because his surname and his Chelsea fandom put him in a very tough position. But it was the Premier League this past Sunday, the 7th of February, at Bramall Lane. Thank you, Dan, for knocking that one in for me. Sheffield United 1, Chelsea 2. Chelsea with all three goals. And to remind you about what happened, we're going to head it over to the Fifth Stand app, the official Chelsea FC app, for all of your interviews, goals, highlights, commentary, clips, and more. If you haven't, go download it. They are gracious enough to let us use their content for our wonderful podcast. Here we go.
Welcome to Bramall Lane. Chelsea face Sheffield United tonight, aiming to rise to fifth in the top division versus the team hoping to bounce from the bottom of the league for the first time since early November. And this is Burke looking to break forward. It's a good opportunity, and it's blasted wide. Oliver Burke. Keane Bryan. Chested down, big opportunity for Sheffield United. Was he brought down? Referee thinks about it and gives it.
There's an offside. And we might get away with this.
I think Chelsea will get away with it.
Yeah, it's Chilwell in out of position, but I think we'll get away with it. It's offside. Offside, yep.
This is Werner. Looks to pull it back. Man with a shot, finds the corner brilliantly. Wonderfully teed up and ruthlessly finished.
That's a wonderful finish. Difficult to steer into the corner, but he's absolutely perfect.
McBurney further forward, tries to slip it through towards him, and then Rudiger puts through his own goal, and Sheffield United have got an equaliser. Here's an opportunity for Werner to take it around the keeper. Penalty has to be. Well, our first reaction was penalty. I mean, he's definitely taken down the player. And it has been given. It is a penalty to Chelsea.
He took it out in the last one. It was a great penalty. What does he do?
Jorginho to put the Blues in front. 2-1. Chelsea lead. The penalty was the correct decision after the video review. And Jorginho makes no mistake from the spot. We've had the added on 5. It's towards McBurney, who will take it down inside the area. And then Sharp with the shot. Wonderful save from Mendy. McBurney looks to turn it back in, but he was offside. A late scare, no late joy for Chris Wilder. And it is Thomas Tuchel's side that pick up the win. Full time here. It's finished. Sheffield United 1, Chelsea 2.
All right, Dan, lineup time. Let's do it.
Edouard Mendy between the sticks, Antonio Rudiger, Andreas Christensen, and Cesar Azpilicueta as your back three. We saw Jorginho Kovacic as that midfield pivot with Ben Chilwell and Reece James on the wings as your kind of wingback situation there. Forwards included Timo Werner, Olivier Giroud, and Mason Mount. Unused substitutes, of which there are many on a Premier League bench this time, Kepa Arrizabalaga, Kurt Zouma, Emerson, Hakim Ziyech, Billy Gilmore, and Tammy Abraham. We did see appearances from Callum Hudson-Odoi very early on, along with Marcus Alonso's double sub in the 62nd minute, and then N'Golo Kanté, the new Mikel, shutting it down in the 75th minute.
Hey, credit where credit's due, Dan.
Yeah.
I said it. Whatever. No credit, apparently. Have I missed this? Apparently, Jorginho Kovacic is now known as the Jovacic midfield. Has anyone else heard that?
Georgie is another one. You know, like the, or was it Corgi? You know, because it's a K.
Can we not on that? As a lover of nicknames, those are both really terrible.
All right. Well, again, not me. I'm just trying to see if that's a thing. Top line stats. Of this match, Chelsea was 69% possession. We had 9 shots, only 3 on target. Sheffield had 8, 3 on target as well. A lot of touches, a lot of passes for us and less for them. 16 tackles for us, 17 for them. So pretty even, very scrappy when each other's in possession. We had 18 clearances actually to the Sheffield's 15, which should make you scratch your head because we had 8 corners to their 1. 8 fouls conceded apiece. The XG on this one, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. Kaylee_graphics bringing it as well. Sheffield United 0.6 plus 1 for the own goal. Chelsea 0.6 plus 1 for the pen. So what you could say is this probably wasn't a great match. Tweeds, though, I'll give you XG stats or lineup. Which one do you want to react to first?
Probably the XG, I suppose. I think looking back at the game, yeah, it felt like a game where there probably wasn't that many goals in it. I'm unsure, probably, I suppose the majority of our XG was attributed to Mason's shot. It wasn't a game that I felt there was a lot of creativity in. I know we'll probably get into a little bit more detail, but, you know, these are sort of the games where I think you need a little bit more from your midfield pair, certainly in the final third, to try and create a bit more to kind of pull a team that wanted to press and were quite aggressive and still pretty difficult to break down. So not a huge amount of chances. I think Giroud didn't really, not cover himself in glory, but he wasn't particularly effective against the centre-back pairing. And as much as Timo worked hard and did well for the goal, there wasn't a great deal of threat, I think, for him, besides obviously the penalty and the cutback in terms of him sort of going for him, being able to create chances for himself or having shots, etc. So it did kind of feel a little bit like one of those games. You know, when you think back, it's when it's Reece James who's having kind of snapshots, it's probably not the most sort of effective game that we've had. I'm surprised that Sheffield really had that much in terms of XG. I can't remember having too many chances. I mean, they had the chance at the death that Mendy saved, but it could be just that it's not the most memorable game. So yeah, feels pretty even. I think we were probably the better side. Just penalty was a bit peculiar, but again, we'll probably dig into that in a bit. But yeah, very, very even game. But you know, at this point in the season, everyone dropping points around us, it's one of those where you just take the 3 points, go home and say thank you very much.
That is the rational and simple way to do it. But I'm sure we'll make it confusing and emotional in just a second. Before we do that, we are going to take our ad break, knock it out of the way. But we do thank the sponsors for financially supporting the show. They allow us to do a lot of cool stuff and give back to the community. So after this quick break, we'll be right back. All right, so jumping in right away, we might as well just pick out probably some of the top two players in the day, being Timo Werner and Mason Mount, affectionately known as Money Mace with the dollar sign tongue emoji. They're finding ways to support one another on the pitch, which is kind of an unlikely duo when you think about it. And, you know, Timo Werner even talking about his link up with Mason Mount. So with that being said, Dan plays as a left number 10, a winger. We've seen Timo play even up front a little bit. I'm most surprised that he's finding some success without his fellow German, Kai Havertz. They seem to be the ones looking after each other, but it sounds like Timo's making some new friends in the old dressing room.
Well, it's good to see. It's good to see Timo finding a little bit of goodness, which, you know, he's been running and running and running for a significant number of matches without finding things or during the course of the season. So for him to pop up with an assist and then also to earn the penalty, which I will take credit for calling that that was going to happen in this game in our Discord, that he was just running at those Sheffield defenders and they were completely making a mess of every challenge that they had that game. That was not the only time that someone made a mistake in their defense. Just one of the only times it actually got adjudicated appropriately. But look, I mean, you know, this is what you want. You want Timo, you know, happy. You want Timo smiling. You want him getting in position. I mean, he, you know, potentially could have been in, you know, a spot to find one or two more opportunities in this match. But, you know, they were playing a pretty condensed back at times, not giving them a ton of space to move through, Joe. So I think ultimately, you know, this is good progress, but now we need to start seeing him score goals on top of it too, not just getting into dangerous positions.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Timo, and I think this is something that probably all football fans are guilty of, certainly when you look at your own team and you start comparing them to other players, I think we focus a little bit too much on what players can't do. And I know this is something that both myself and Chelsea youth share. But sometimes we focus a little bit too much on the negative. So, you know, Timo playing back to goal, maybe his first touch, et cetera, a little bit erratic at times. But when you can get him confident, when you can get him being direct, the assist for the amount of goal, the cutback that he took, I mean, it was an exceptional piece of play. I mean, it didn't really, for me, come across that they were making a big deal out of it. For me, it was such a fantastic cutback. Great run, noticing that, you know, that Chilwell was likely going to be able to find a decent pass to him, etc. I just think, yeah, you know, that his directness in games, it's a little bit different for us. I think for so long we've got players who want to come back to the ball, that want to receive the ball to feet. And I think he kind of has a little bit of change of dynamic, a little bit of change of tempo. And I think he is starting to get a little bit more confidence back in. I really like the way that Mason ran up to him and sort of really celebrated with him for the goal. Kind of included him in that moment as well. And, you know, the play for the penalty as well. I mean, you know, again, we were sort of talking a little bit before the pod started, but one of the most peculiar penalty decisions that I've seen in ages, in that he runs from goal, he's absolutely clattered. The linesman is looking right at it. The referee is looking right at it. And then it felt like 20 minutes passed and then like a random little VAR flag going up and then let's go back like 15 minutes and give a penalty. But, you know, great play for the goal. And in reality, with the penalty as well, he's kind of been sort of one of the determining factors in the match. And as much as I think people will want him to be this great playmaker and great technical player, as long as he's impacting games, I think, you know, the goals will come on all that sort of stuff. But he's played two significant roles in the goals, and I think probably was one of the reasons that we actually won the game today. Yes, you want more. Yes, you want him to do more, etc. But hopefully that will come with time. But it's nice to see him start impacting games again. And yeah. I think he was good today, you know, said things to improve, but I think largely if you look at the impact on the game in a game that's very low XG, very few chances, he was probably, you know, one of the, if not the deciding factor for Chelsea.
For me, is we just look at the offense, and again, this is probably the area where, Nick, we've seen the most changes from Tuchel, right? Which kind of makes sense. Like he's quickly solidified his back line, albeit it seems like the outside backs or wingers, you know, change minus an injury to Thiago Silva. But he's seemingly being able to find relative success with being able to change so many different players in these positions, move them around. It wasn't seamless today. It probably wasn't perfect. But again, to have kind of the two attackers with a very strong focal point of Olivier Giroud today was new to the team. And I think, you know, to what Joe said, Mason and Timo really embraced it and found ways to exploit spaces that at least I hadn't seen under Tuchel yet.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't looked, you know, I mean, it hasn't looked fluid. I mean, certainly we've looked more fluid under Sarri and Lampard styles going forward. I think the interesting part about Timo to me is, yes, he's getting into spaces that are dangerous. Yes, he's drawing penalties, which is, you know, great. Obviously, that is fantastic and helps the team. And his cutback today was far better than some of his other final third passes in recent games. It just does not seem like he's getting into spaces to shoot very often. And when he does, there seems to be a little, you know, kind of pause or hesitance to do that. And so, maybe it's just the way that, you know, teams are kind of forcing him out wide or forcing him into different channels, and he's not as natural, kind of going those directions. But that's a curious thing to me, right? Because I would have thought with Olivier Giroud up front and Mason Mount behind him that he would have been able to kind of bob and weave between those layers and find a little space to shoot the ball. And it just didn't really seem like that was the game plan. It seemed like he was going to play much more of the distributor role. And even if you know you look at the penalty, for example, he sprayed the ball across, right? He didn't try and take it himself down to the byline. He tried to spray it all the way across, Joe. So Timo's still kind of an enigma for me. He clearly had one of his better games in recent memory today, but still a little curious.
One very quick thing to add on to that, Nick, is something I've certainly noticed with Timo in the past couple of games. I think a lot of the control and sort of the technical short game that you get with Kovac and Jorginho in midfield, Timo, certainly today, I noticed a couple of times that he made some really good early runs, but you just don't have the midfield players at times to find that little ball over the top. I know Kovac played one early in the, I think it was early in the first half, which is a fantastic pass. If he's got that in his locker, sometimes you just want to see it maybe a little bit more often. I know that we want to play short. We're trying to retain possession. We're trying to be a little bit more possession dominant at times under Tuchel. But sometimes that variety, or at least the threat of actually putting Timo over the top, does change the way, you know, maybe Sheffield United don't press as heavy, because if they're pressing, they're actually, well, they will play it over the top. And Timo is obviously probably the quickest player on the pitch. So I do feel a little bit for him sometimes that the way that we're playing this kind of short build-up possession phase, that when he's dropping into pockets, playing back to goal, definitely not his strength. You know, I think sometimes it's players don't actually want to pass him the ball because he's not going to retain it. So I think for him to be successful, to get those chances we saw in the Bundesliga where he was kind of running through and goal, I think we need to have a little bit of a look in terms of just varying some of that build-up and just going long every now and then. I know Thiago Silva can do it. Kovac obviously has that pass in his locker. We saw it a couple of times today, but he was at least trying it. But just the threat of Timo going in behind, I think a little bit adjusts how defences will play against us. So I'd like to see that a little bit more. But as you're saying, apart from that, those opportunities, he's not really working himself into chances to finish. And when he does, it's hesitancy, it's lack of confidence. And you see that in the way that he's playing a little bit in the penalty area at times.
And he got unlucky today, though, Dan. Like, you think back to like the third minute and we had that kind of weird bouncing ball that got through to Timo and he tried to poke it across to Mason. He didn't get enough on it. But like, if you would have thought about the way that the game unfolded, you get an early one on Sheffield and they have to really come out and adjust their game plan. You know, perhaps he has more chances in behind or whatever. It's a complete hypothetical, but he did look lively. It's still a little weird looking to me.
It was interesting. There was another point too where Asby could have released him a little early into the box, and you know, Timo just, I think, is kind of, it's sometimes caught between two minds. Like, do I have to move back and bring myself onside so that the individual who's holding on the pass, like Asby in that moment, can load me up appropriately? Or do I make the run because I think someone's going to try to make that pass, and we're not doing either often enough, right? We haven't adapted to one style, which is, hey, we're gonna release that. We're gonna pull the trigger quick on these passes to get you into space so Timo can just run and would, like, you know, less likely to be offside. Or he knows that we're not going to make it, so he should just hold back and wait to see the pass go off. But you can't try to play it either way. You need to kind of say, we're going to commit to trying to get you the ball in space. And, you know, Aspi does have that pass. Kovac has a pass like that. I mean, we're missing maybe the Gilmore inclusion. The Thiago Silva being out injured is definitely challenges that. You know, Callum not being on the pitch to start the game. Those are people who can help make that pass to put him into space, Brandon. But when we don't have a consistent effort on it, it's going to create a challenge for trying to get the most or the best out of him.
Like, it comes down to, you know, training. They want to set up the training, and you set it up like in a third of the field and you rotate, and then it's like, how quickly can you get that ball in? And they just have to try it so they can find their angles, find the draw, whatever they want to put out in the shape. But I mean, a lot of us probably watched the Liverpool City match, and you just think to the Mo Salah penalty. Again, release him wide into space, and he's got Diaz, you know, one-on-one running into the box. We just aren't able to complete that pass. And I remember they had the Sadio Mane, which released him long, and he ended up getting tripped right outside the box before kind of stumbling in. And those are the situations that, to your guys' point, Chelsea just haven't unlocked yet. And that's something with the attackers that we have, and Tuchel saying explicitly and over that, you know, Timo needs to be running in behind defenders. That's where you are at your best. That's where, you know, he wants to be. I doubt he really, you know, life is easier. When he's in behind defenders, life is easier. But he hasn't really had that chance except for Southampton early in the season.
So someone, I think on the NBC coverage, someone said that his style is far closer to Aubameyang than it is any
other.
Oh, shit,
that was Tim Howard.
Yeah, which made me pause for a second. But then, you know, I kind of reflected back on types of goals that Aubameyang scores. And I think there's some parallel there. It's not – I think Aubameyang's a better, more clinical finisher just overall. I think he does more with the chances that he's given. Not this year, obviously. He's really struggling this year. But in general, in his career, I think he really is a good finisher. But that kind of style is really interesting. It's also we've talked a lot about possession this year, right? We've talked about high possession, you know, and under Tuchel, it's even gone up, not down. I mean, that's kind of the wild part is, you know, 70% possession away from home is interesting, Joe. But to me, when I was watching City earlier, the thing that City do that no other team in the Premier League does, not even Liverpool, is in tight spaces, their runners are always looking to break lines and make the perfect pass between those lines.
And they Raheem have Sterling danced in the box today, which was amazing.
Yeah, they just have runners who are willing to try shit, right? Like, even if it doesn't come off, even if they don't get the ball, they're going to always try and break those lines because that's the only way you get that team out of that set. Once they feel like you can break them, they get disconnected. And then you saw what City can do, you know, after that. But this hype, it does not seem to me that a high possession always in the opponent's final third style of system is going to be natural for Timo. He's probably going to have to adapt his game for something like that.
No, I was just going to say, in terms of the style of play, certainly compared to City, the way that they move the ball, so, I mean, compared to us, is night and day.
Yeah,
I think that the way we use possession, certainly under Tuchel, and I think he's been very clever here, is that he's probably noticed that when we lose ball in the transition and when we try to attack and overlay with numbers and get caught, you know, the biggest threat to our midfield pairing is space. You know, if you leave Cover in space or Jorginho in space, we saw a couple of times today, you know, they get a little bit embarrassed trying to sort of play one-on-one with people. And it's not their game. You know, it hasn't been their game since they've been here, and putting them in that position is tricky. So sort of playing a possession game, keeping the lines tighter, keeping maybe things a little bit more rigid in terms of structure. You don't maybe have people trying to play sort of aggressively, trying to make aggressive movements, playing sort of slightly more trickier passes. I think certainly there are times where we have kind of worked the ball how kind of City do in terms of, you know, we swing it to the left-hand side. And instead of maybe playing one or two passes to then whip it to the right-hand side, we play four or five passes, or someone takes too many touches on the ball. And then by the time you kind of get it over to Reece James or somebody else, they've kind of completely reset their defensive structure. I think certainly when we struggle in the final third, when we have this possession and when we're really sort of pressed up the pitch, we lack a little bit of that creativity and that little bit of vision and maybe some of that guile and craft that City have to sort of unlock the door. And I mean, that potentially is that's kind of what you've bought Kai Havertz for, which is interesting, you know, obviously that he's not really sort of hit those kind of peaks for us this season, but he theoretically is the guy that is supposed to be the locksmith in the team, the guy that can find any key to any padlock and unlock it sort of at any time. But I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this sort of possession-based football really progresses, because yeah, it's great we keep possession, you know, we're not turning the ball over as much, we're not as open on the counter, we're not as open defensively, but I do think the pace at which we're playing, certainly at the moment, when teams will come at us and when they can defend like Sheffield United can today, and we have to remember they're not, by the league position, they're not one of the better teams that we'll play in the league. If teams can defend and if they've got that ability to sort of shift left to right, it's going to be difficult for us to try and break them down, as we saw today. A little bit of magic from Mason, a little bit of a gamble from Timo, the difference. But that speed of passing, speed of thought, the ability to play that final pass, that killer ball, we are lacking a little bit of that at the moment. So how Tuchel develops that, for me, is going to be the interesting thing, because I think I don't think that is what separates us from City, but that is one of the big things that separates us from City, the speed of their pass decision-making and their willingness to make those runs and willingness to play those passes, those sort of aggressive passes as well.
I think it's a credit to Mason for, you know, the last game we kind of talked about, he had a great game outside of the final third. And this was the game where he was able to make sure that he put the bow nicely on his performance by actually scoring the goal. But when you look at this lineup, I think to the kind of city point of, you know, where do the goals come from? When this lineup came out, you know, Giroud looked, you know, absolutely lost in this type of system. You know, you saw, you know, Kovacic and Jorginho, you know, outside of a penalty or kind of a crazy one in every 150 matches for Kovacic, you're not expecting a goal to come from them. And you know, maybe you get lucky with, you know, a Andreas Christensen has not scored for Chelsea. Rudiger can occasionally score a header as he gets in with one every now and then. But there wasn't a whole lot of goals in this lineup. And if you're going to, you know, be in a position where you're relying on, you know, Timo, who has not been scoring, Giroud, who, you know, is getting kind of marked out of the game a little bit by the defenders from Sheffield, Nick, I mean, there's not a whole lot that you can do. And maybe that's where you potentially see, you know, as Callum situates in, Ziyech coming in back in potentially, maybe Mason drops a little bit deeper so that you do add a midfielder who can give you a little bit more, you know, of that goal plus assist threat, you know, but gives him a little bit more the defensive responsibility.
Yeah, and that is going to be interesting. I, you know, obviously credit to Mason for a weak-footed shot that was perfectly placed in the far corner today. Just tremendous. Obviously had to tweet at Mike Ryan and Chris Whittingham right after that. Just let him know. Just let him know what's going on after our many conversations over the last couple of weeks. Mace had a good game today, and I think in this like weird kind of floating 10 role, Brandon, to me, if he can half turn run with the ball, he's going to have a ton of success in this league, because there are gaps there. And even Sheffield, with how tight they were marking and pressing, I think had issues at times. If we broke that first line of press, there was room to run. I mean, Kovacic had room to run a handful of times today too, to be honest. So it's a good game for Mace. And I think, you know, obviously the goal is a great finish.
Yeah, another standout point for him too is, I know we're not judging him on how much he runs, but you know, he broke up a really good counterattack that we gave away softly off a corner kick where it was ours in the other kind of box or whatever. So anyways, he, you know, he was able to track back and break it up and did well. Didn't have to foul, didn't have to drop a caution, you know, pick up a booking, anything like that. So he did well with that as well. So I just think that, yeah, so far so good with him. He's getting minutes. I thought it was funny. Was it the one or two matches he didn't like start under Tuchel and everyone was like, oh, Mason's gone. Well, he's not gone. He just needed some time, get some minutes, and he's going to be playing in between the lines a lot. And maybe that'll be a little bit more closer to what he did at Derby, and it'll be a little bit more comfortable. But all we've kind of always wanted to see with Mason is some consistency to get traction.
Timo just posted a nice Twitter post with a finger pointing at Mason Mount and them hugging. So
got bromance, the man crush.
Bromance secured. There we go. Nailed it. Bam.
Well, oh, yeah. It's good to get Timo on the goals and assists chart, which is important. So outside of our attack, defense today was not great. We've had some changes. We had some poor performances. And we gave up our first goal under Tuchel. It was obviously going to happen eventually. Did I expect it to happen like this? I sure didn't. Did I expect Rudiger to poke it into his own goal? I sure didn't, because I didn't really think Rudiger would be playing at this point, if you asked me 2 weeks ago. So anyways, Christensen has jumped in the line. Big shoes to fill, metaphorically, obviously, Dan, and the fact that Thiago Silva out with an injury. And what was the update today? Is it still an injury, or was there something else going on with him? I can't remember.
Still seems to be out at the moment, so it'll be interesting to see what the extent of that is. I would imagine that you don't see him play versus Barnsley. I mean, Newcastle might be the next match where he potentially is healthy enough to come back in. But
I found the update. They're shooting. Yep, he's not fit. They're shooting for Southampton, but that's an ambitious target. So we definitely need to talk about Christensen, because we might be seeing him for a couple of weeks all of a sudden.
Well, let's just also talk about the fact that Tomori had another really good game for AC Milan.
Really, Dan? Oh, twisting the knife.
Look,
I'll still wear my fit kit. I'll do it.
You should, because it's a absolutely ridiculous decision amidst everything else to send him away, knowing that this was going to happen most likely. So, you know, whatever. Beyond that, Christensen looks better in the back three, which I think is the biggest takeaway here. I mean, look, he did so and has performed well for Chelsea under a back three previously. It looks much better under, you know, in that type of system than under a back four. You know, I would like to actually see a little bit more of what he did at one point in the match where he actually tried to progress the ball forward, which was something he had done on loan in Germany. He was very comfortable with carrying the ball forward and trying to help break some of those lines to allow the defense to move up and compress the game effectively. But that is not something he did too often. But I also think that maybe is down to the fact that, you know, our midfield didn't always have the easiest time of kind of keeping the ball with the way that the press was happening for the majority of the match, Nick. So I'm okay with Christensen in this back three. It, to me, though, is maybe the crazier question is, wow, Kurt Zouma fallen so far off the map from number one to number four in the span of 3 weeks.
There has to be a reconsideration there. That to me is crazy. And, you know, you look at Rudiger today, who I think did not have his best game. Clearly the own goal, the own goal is ridiculous. I mean, especially for as much time and space as he had to play that ball. I mean, it's, you got to get on the same page with the goalkeeper there. And I realize those errors can happen. So I hope that this doesn't seem like, oh, one error and you're out. Like, that shouldn't be the case. But that's a bad one. And then just some of the general passing from him today was a mess. And then he was involved in kind of a soft penalty claim at the end, too. I know he had a couple of headers and that, you know, because the tides turn on Twitter so quickly, Joe, people were like, well, he's back, you know. so, you know, what I understand how the game's played there. But we've seen Kurt Zouma play on that side of a three before. I think you have to give Zouma another look after today.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the own goal, I mean, I thought something had happened because I was in such shock that, it's one of them where if it happens on FIFA, you're screaming that the game's scripted, the controller's going into the wall. You know, it was such a strange thing. And it seemed like the whole entire pitch slowed down and it was in slow motion. And there was a camera shot behind the goal and you could see all the Chelsea players almost looking like something could have gone wrong. And then like the rest of the game, I think, as you say, I think, you know, I'll give him his G's, you know, he had some good blocks and some good moments towards the end at the death there. But, you know, some of the passing, particularly there was one out to Alonso right at the death where, you know, you're trying to keep the ball, you're trying to keep possession. And he plays it like a yard behind him and then gives him a death stare when Alonso is expecting to run onto it, stops and can't get it. And you're thinking like Rudiger, like, okay, come on. I don't think he necessarily has the passing quality. I think the interesting thing with Rudiger is that he now looks to me like he can only really play in a back three. You know, I think when we've seen him playing a back two or back four, even I should say with two centre backs, you know, it's not a great look for him. So, you know, you have arguably between him and Christensen and Aspi, three guys who this is probably their position now if they're to remain at Chelsea. But insofar as Zouma goes, yeah, I find it a little bit perplexing. You know, I don't want to dig into the locker room politics and how a lot of the so-called people that were called out in certain journalist articles are now playing quite regularly. And maybe that's Tuchel being a little bit sensible and not stirring the pot too much. But, you know, Zouma, I do think he's a better overall defender than Rudiger. I think he's better in the air. I think he misses his threat from set pieces. Noticeable to me now that, yeah, we had a few little flick-ons, but with Zouma there, I think we have a genuine threat and an ability to score. And certainly when it comes to the defensive side of the game as well, you know, people always talk about Zouma's lack of technicality and how awkward he looks. You know, I've never seen him kind of sort of walk the ball into his own net and give away an own goal of that kind of magnitude. So I would like to see him come back in. I don't know if it's something that Tuchel is going to look at, but I think from that left side of centre-back spot, yeah, and without harking on about the fact that Tomori would be fantastic at this point in time and he's playing so well in Italy as well, just compounds it that tiny bit more. But I would like to see Zouma. I think he'll play in the cup game, the next game we have. So hopefully if he puts in a performance, he might be able to sort of push his way back into the frame.
Well, that's the thing. And do we play back 3/5 for that cup game or do we switch up again? Because another person who seemed to not, it's early days, right? So no one's calling him to get the sack. But Chilwell might as well have gotten subbed at halftime. 62nd minute is essentially halftime, aka it gave the subs enough time to warm up and get ready. He had some good runs today, I thought.
They didn't play him in at all. Like I was screaming at the TV. Like, he's in Acres of Space just going.
That, yeah, I saw that. Which isn't his fault. The penalty was a debacle three times over on his part.
Bad.
Which,
yeah.
Okay, got bailed out. You know, sometimes it happens. Understood. I'm still trying to figure out how he fits in that system, Nick. If it's we're not getting him the ball in dangerous places, but he brought Alonso on. You know, Reese struggled as well, which we don't have to worry about right now because he didn't get subbed off. But if we just look at Chilwell for now, he's got a lot of work to do to just find the balance in that system moving forward.
Yeah, I think this was especially complicated today because we're talking about Rudiger and we're talking about Chilwell both on the same
left
side, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if there's an extreme amount of confidence there. I think Chilwell is much more of a natural left back and has a bias towards defending more than he does attacking. But even then, we've seen him attack really well this season, put in some really quality service into the box. And even when he got through on some of these runs today, Dan, which was very it didn't happen very often. The service doesn't look like it's confident right now either. And it's a bad combination when Tuchel says at the beginning of the match and the pre-match press conference that Alonso needs a rest because he's not used to playing, and then he comes in for the final 30. I mean, that's a tough look.
Yeah, things he didn't expect in 2021 was a resurgence for Marcus Alonso and Ben Chilwell being out in the cold, as it were. It's so crazy to me that, you know, you could talk rightfully about the change of formation. I actually think it's put Ben Chilwell and Reece James both under a little bit of additional pressure. I mean, Reece does not look as comfortable in that wing back position as he does, you know, playing in a back four as right back, where he gets the opportunity to really work on an overload, really work on the overlapping runs. You know, his amount of back passes now in a match relative to some of the more forward or progressive passes he was making, or the interchange he would have with a Ziyech, with a Callum on the right hand side, it is so diminished now in the way that this is set up. And while we definitely have a little bit more of that defensive stability in terms of the, you know, we're conceding fewer shots, holding more possession of the ball, like the inverse problem here is that you have players in Chilwell and Reece Joe who maybe are not as comfortable playing this way, and either they have to find their confidence, or it's possible that maybe there's someone else in the lineup who's going to have to jump in for him.
Yeah, Reece is the interesting one for me, because I think even watching him at the academy level, he was never really the right wing back in terms of how Chelsea played. You know, you had Dejan Sterling, you had Tarek Lamptey, you had guys who probably had more of a natural wing back skill. So I think Reece is probably one of the most well-balanced fullbacks in the Premier League, but he is a right back. He's a right back at the back four. That is his position. And if the back three stuff is going to continue, and, you know, I don't think this is something that's going to happen because Aspi is captain, but Reece as a right centre-back is where he played a lot for the academy. He's played there a lot. He was fantastic in the FA Youth Cup, playing there, fantastic for the 18s as the right-sided centre-back in the back three. He's obviously got the size. I think he would probably have a better range of passing. He's more physical. We know, I think, probably Reece is a better footballer, technically, than Aspi at this point in his career. So Reece, for me, potentially is that first centre-back. But as a wing-back, he doesn't have that level of dynamism, certainly when you compare him to someone like Callum, who is obviously more of a winger, but playing sort of in a little bit more of a kind of defensive position. I think wing-backs these days, they're quite one-on-one in terms of their skill set. You look at how Tarek plays at Brighton, for example, his ability to actually beat players. You know, he's more of kind of a quasi-winger, right midfielder, than he is a full-back. It's going to be interesting to see how they're used going forward because, yeah, I think against Spurs it made sense. They were very defensive. I think there were times today where he got forward and he had some nice opportunities, but you can see his first thought when he gets the ball now doesn't necessarily always have the winger ahead of him, because you've got this split strikers, or you've got a striker and you've got two tens who are playing a little bit more infield. Doesn't quite have that relationship that he did previously with the players ahead of him. So, yeah, going to be interesting how he fares. And I think Chilwell as well. You know, I think his game today, first half, I mean, I kind of agree. I think he's another victim of the fact that we're just not really moving the ball quickly. And if he's going to be standing out on the touchline, just waving his arms around, and I know what Nick was saying, there was a point where he actually was sort of waving slightly comically in terms of getting the ball. But again, it shows you that, you know, in that sort of system that you have specialist players. You know, you have a specialist wing backs. They are wing backs. They're not necessarily great fullbacks. You know, Victor Moses was never going to play right back when we went to a back four, but he was like, you know, the Nigerian Kaffi when he was playing as a wing back. And the same with Marcos Alonso. He's not a great left back, but as a wing back, he has used, you know, he's got ability to play there. So it's going to be a tricky one. I mean, I think potentially Tuchel, you know, he likes playing a back four. He likes playing a back five, back three, whatever it's going to be. But if he wants to get the best particularly out of those two players, they are young. They are probably the future of those positions. You're probably looking at a back four at some point. And then, as we sort of alluded to earlier, we don't really have the right centre-back combination at the moment, unless you go back to Silva and Zuma, to maybe play those positions. And then even then, we've got the back four, we don't quite have the midfield to cover them. So it's a little bit of a, you know, you kind of move positions or move strengths one place and then you get weaknesses in other areas. Try and cover that up, go to different formation, you create new weaknesses. So I think it kind of lends itself to the squad is not quite suited to one style or another at the moment. And that probably will be the puzzle that Tuchel has to solve for the rest of the season.
All right, well, let us help him solve it here. If we were to go ahead and put together a best 11 for Tuchel, assuming everyone's healthy, which...
On the spot.
Right, which is a terrible thing for us to do as we just picked up injuries. Assuming we're going to play 3-4-3, we can all agree very quickly that Edouard Mendy will be in goal. So yes. Moving on to the defense, if we have three center backs and all healthy... Dan, don't these three essentially pick themselves already?
I mean, you know, in terms of what we just discussed, I don't know necessarily if that's the case. I mean, who I would expect would be the Silva, Aspi, and Rudiger selection. I mean, I think that's what I would anticipate. I think, Joe, you made a great comment about Rhys maybe versus Aspi in terms of just what they offer. But I don't foresee, at least right now, Tuchel moving away from that three. It just doesn't seem like he wants to, and you know, seems like that's, you know, the veteran leadership that he's kind of asked for. Whether or not, you know, scoring an own goal of that nature qualifies as leadership, I don't know, but that's what I just would expect he pencils in.
Any strong arguments?
I would change it, but then I completely agree with Dan. I think that in Tuchel's mind at the moment, that is his strongest back three. I think on terms of ability, I would go with Kurt as the left centre-back. I would play Thiago Silva in the middle, and I would play Reece James as the right centre-back. And that would be the back three that I would personally pick.
I just wonder if you're not...
I like Joe's better than Tuchel's, just to be fair. I like it better.
I'm just worried that you don't get enough out of Reece James in that position because he is so dynamic. But let me hold. We don't need to get into that. Nick, from a midfield perspective, what do you think his best 11 is in the midfield with this system, including the wingbacks? And then we can see if there are any strong opinions that are against you.
Man, I mean, it's tough, right? Because I think right before Tuchel came on, you know, Mount was playing a little further back, right? Which was interesting. Jorginho and Kovacic weren't playing that often.
Jovacic.
No.
Love the way Brown to deliver that.
It's all right, just throw it out there. Come on, no, you got this. Build him up, guys. Give him some confidence.
I think you have to play Alonso right now, don't you?
Okay.
As much as I'm smirking when I'm saying that, I think Alonso is the default left wing back.
And then I think you play Callum on the other side.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And then, like, I think he will play Kovacic and Jorginho until the wheels fall off. I don't know if I would do that personally, but that's what it looks like he's doing.
Is that but what you think his best kind of like middle four is right now?
I think
with what you've seen?
I don't truly understand his style yet. It's half Conte, half Sarri. Weird kind of midfield
tent. Like,
I'm just saying as a supporter, I'm struggling with a little bit of it. You know, it's been successful. I just don't know the pattern of play yet.
Any strong opposing opinions? I mean, there's no World Cup winning N'Golo Kante in here.
I'd go Kante Kova. And it's not because I'm the world's biggest Jorginho critic, although technically I might be in that conversation. I just think that if I don't think you need both of them in the team. I see that certainly today. We don't quite have the profile of midfielder that I'd like that can actually defend, play well in the middle and actually add something in the final third. So I probably choose Kovar because he's got that ball carrying ability, and Kante because at least he is world class at sort of winning the ball back. And there are times certainly in this game where we missed a few tackles in midfield that actually, you know, better teams might have taken advantage of some of those situations. So maybe I'd go Kante and Kovar, but you know, it's a bit tricky at the moment.
I'd also say on this too, with Silva back there, Jorginho has more accurate passes coming into him. And he's looked a little bit better. I'm not telling you that's who I'd pick, but you know, I think that's part of the reason for his resurgence is he's just clearly identified, like, I have a direct connection here, and this guy's going to give me an accurate ball 98% of the time, you know? So.
Well, we'll have to see. Kante could have had a shot today, but passed off to the side. He just still doesn't want to do it. All right, Tweeds, you get attack. You get the front three for this one.
Oh, the easy positions to fill. are we assuming that everyone is fit, yeah? If everyone is fit.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
And there are no personal problems like Pulisic had today. Family issues.
So I probably... And okay, this is me being a little bit outside of the box, which is generally how I tend to approach most things. I would play Mount just doing the Mount role, which is wherever he feels like being in the attack. I would play Pulisic, and I would actually play and try Kai Havertz as that false nine that Mason's been playing a little bit. Because I think when he was at Leverkusen, he started to play that role, and that's when he started coming into the consciousness of a lot of people. He's good in the air. I think actually him dropping into the spaces, you know, receiving the ball, I'd like to see it happen. And I think maybe combining with Pulisic and also Mason just doing the Mason role. And obviously that means Timo's on the bench, for example, but I would like to see those three play together because you've got, I think with Pulisic, you've got that directness, dribbling ability, Mount, all the energy, we've seen what he can do today. And I think Havertz, that might potentially be a position that he can shine in as well, because I think he's played particularly well there. If he can drop deep, you've got Callum overlapping, Alonso, obviously, we know he likes arriving. Just a quick slight side note this. There was a point today, like 10 minutes from the end of the half, and for some reason, Alonso had drifted all the way from the left wing, and he was standing like on the right-hand corner of the penalty area for absolutely no reason. Got in the way of whatever build-up play was happening and fell over and lost the ball. I was just like, yes, let's go, Alonso. But yeah, that would be my front three, just to try it, because I think, yeah, there is something there with Havertz in that area.
Any strong opposing feelings?
You're 0 for 3 on strikers in the team with the front three. But, I mean, at the same point, I don't know. I'm willing to try anything that will score goals at this point, because that's something that we have not looked like doing, Dan.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go with a model, especially with, like, I'm just taking Joe's lineup here. If you're going to have, you know, Reese in the back, if you're going to have Callum... You know, if you're going to have maybe then a Mount on the right, potentially, or maybe more as like the, you know, the central fixture, and then you have Havertz and Pulisic ahead of him. Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Alonso scored goals for us recently. Ben Chilwell hasn't. You know, Callum has scored goals more recently for us than other players. You know, Pulisic is still trying to figure out if he can score another goal this season to get to a total of two. You need to get more people who would be comfortable shooting on the pitch, because N'Golo Kante had a chance to potentially shoot, didn't take the shot today. Jorginho is not going to shoot from outside the box. You're going to get a lofting ball from Kovacic. I mean, we need to score more goals. Like that's it. Like that. My thesis for Chelsea 2020-2021, score more goals.
I have a name for this formation, which is the reverse mullet. It is party and uncertainty in the front, and just a lot of business in the back. You know,
straight from the Pep Guardiola Barcelona How to Play Football manuscript from 2008.
That is right.
The forgotten chapter. El reverse mullet, we like it.
Yep.
All right. Well, that will be pretty interesting, especially when we put this out there on social media and in the radio waves to hear what people think. But, I mean, this leaves out Ziyech, Kante, Tammy, Werner, Chilwell, some big players. Does that just mean we have a stronger bench? We can attack teams differently in the second half? We'll have to see. But this is the uncertainty that comes with the new manager. I mean, think how hard Frank pushed for Chilwell. Played him literally nonstop, and now potentially he's not as well suited. And the guy who walked out of the stadium at halftime against West Brom earlier this season is back in the lineup. That is just absolutely wild. So we'll have to figure it out. But let's go ahead and start the wind down on this one. Dan of the match, sir. No shenanigans, no misses, but also not a lot of time to get the votes in.
Yeah, but we definitely have a clear favorite here. It might be a stop the count moment, just this. But Timo Werner, 55%, wins a man of the match, Dan of the match poll. Oh my God!
I think that's right.
It's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, he wins a penalty and he gets an assist. So you know, I mean, just on you know total contributions. You know, he was pivotal to us winning the match. It makes sense to me.
So I went ahead and checked it, get a little update. By the way, I threw away my vote by voting for Christensen. Just want to put that on record. Werner's up to 57%, so he's actually continued to do better.
We need Kornacki in here to just make sure that we have all the votes counted at the end of this and that the percentages are right.
Is this official? Have we declared?
Yeah. We're waiting for the network to chime in.
We still got votes coming in from Allegheny County on who the man of the match was. Maybe Mason Mount with a late surge, but we don't know until we get those ballots in, those mail-in ballots.
That's right.
They stay in the match poll.
Sorry, Allegheny County. I'm over that stuff, guys. It's time to move on. I can't go back that far in my life. The rest of the fixtures in February, in case you have forgotten, as Tweeds mentioned earlier, we've got FA Cup fifth round action with Barnsley. Then we're going to, and that's
the
on fight, Thursday.
Fighting Barnes, man. That they
fight
are.
Fighting Barnes.
Smashed them earlier this year.
Ooh. Newcastle got moved from Sunday to Monday.
Thank
so
God.
Enjoy really your Valentine. Enjoy your Valentine's Day, Nick. You've got the entire day to do whatever you want.
Yes.
Southampton will be a week later on February 20th, so that'll be nice. An entire 4.5-5 days off between matches. That'll be great. And then it's Champions League, Atletico Madrid, first leg, the 23rd, which is a quick turnaround. And then Manchester United, the 28th, to wrap up this short month. Some of the results this weekend, this is a whole nother talking point.
Great weekend.
Nick, run us through what in the world happened in the Premier League.
Arsenal continued to Arsenal and lost to Villa 1-0. It was horrible to watch. Burnley and Brighton and Hove Albion, two teams on the ascendancy, 1-1 draw, just really fighting it out. Newcastle beating Southampton, did not see that coming, but that's a thing that happened. Fulham and West Ham played the most interesting 0-0 draw I can remember in a very long time, including just an absurd red card at the end. I mean, my God, figure it out, guys. Good Lord. Manchester United win. No, they don't. In the 95th minute, they give up an equalizer. Incredible stuff. I did have quite a chuckle at that. Spurs beat the hapless West Brom Albion. They're terrible. Wolves and Leicester, important 0-0 draw for Chelsea there. Again, another big fixture. It looks like City won 150-0 today.
Liverpool.
Sorry, Liverpool. Yeah, sorry, champs.
There goes your goal difference.
And then it looks like Chelsea picked up points on some of our rivals here and are now in. What does it look like here, Brandon? Fifth place on goal.
That's right. You were probably looking too far down the table, Nick. We jumped from eighth to fifth. Tweeds, most important non-Chelsea result this weekend, in your opinion?
I think probably Leicester, I'd say the draw. I think it would have been interesting if they would have lost, but I still think Liverpool are a good team. Obviously, they're going through a bit of a blip at the moment. But I think Leicester are the team that I potentially think we will challenge for that fourth Champions League spot. Continuing to get back at them. I think do we play them at Stamford Bridge later this season? Or is it Leicester? I can't remember. I completely forgot.
We play Leicester at Stamford Bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, if we look at it in that respect, then if we take that as a win, then we're not too far off them. So Yeah, they're the ones that I've got on my sights. And just because it's great to see Arsenal just continuing to be a mid-table team. I know I've said this to so many people, but growing up in London with Arsenal and being so successful in the late 90s and early 2000s, their fans are some of the worst people to be around when they're successful. To see them really just become relatively mediocre, relatively obscure, it warms the soul on a continual basis. So it's like a nice little glass of whiskey for me every time I see them in 10th. It is very nice. So yeah, whenever they lose, it's always a good day for me.
Yes, Leicester's May 15th, second to the last match of the season. Arsenal, speaking of them, third to the last match, and Man City fourth of the last. So we got to get our points early because it's not going to be fun playing them right at the end.
We seem to have this ridiculous run in the past couple of seasons. It's always been slight, like that's like heavy. How it's been coded.
Heavy, yeah. I would say the Everton draw was that's a big point for them.
Yeah,
especially considering they have two games in hand on us. Same with Villa. I mean that Villa result was unfortunate for us because I don't think they offered a hell of a lot the rest of the game after they scored in like the second minute or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you would have expected that Arsenal would have given them a better fight, but alas, they only turn it on when we come around. So good stuff.
The other thing to consider too is that the next match Leicester and Liverpool play is each other. So there is a massive opportunity for us looking at what comes next. You know, if Liverpool lose, you know, there's an opportunity to actually go back into fourth position. If Leicester lose and Liverpool go up, you still made up, you know, ground on Leicester. So, or they draw. I mean, that's great too.
Right.
Draws. We want draws across the board and to win. Like that's it.
So again, let's run through the top six real quick. Man City in first, 50 points, 22 played. Man United in second, 23 played, 45 points. So there's a 5-point gap now. Leicester City, 23 matches played, 43 points. Liverpool, 23 matches played, 40 points. Chelsea, fifth, 23 matches played, 39 points. And then West Ham, sixth, 23 matches, 39 points. And so look at the goal difference. City just absolutely running away with that 150-0 win today on goal difference. Mm-hmm. But no, in all honesty, they have a plus 29 goal difference. United are plus 19. Leicester are plus 14. Liverpool plus 15. Chelsea plus 14. West Ham plus 6. So as we look at tiebreakers and all these other, you know, factors that could come at the end of the season, we're right there in the midst of it as well. I think to the point about Everton drawing United, that also halts their momentum. It also kind of keeps them from really living it up a little bit. So a huge opportunity to leapfrog Liverpool at the weekend. But again, we can't overlook the FA Cup. Chelsea, I think especially, are very excited about that tournament and that competition because of how many times we've won it and how much it means. So what an amazing run that we've had, an opportunity. Like, this is, Tuchel will not look to stop all of his great momentum, undefeated in his first four matches, winning three, including beating Tottenham with Barnsley.
I would say this though, like you look at Liverpool and Leicester in particular, right? And I throw West Ham in there for shits and giggles. Of those three teams, I almost think West Ham are the most dangerous, like right now, which I know is ludicrous to say, and like people are going to come at me, that's fine. I think Liverpool lost their clutch gene, man, and that was probably the most dynamic thing that they've had over the last 4 or 5 years. Like, they have had a clutch gene. They haven't looked like it. They looked defeated.
Alisson's rattled.
Yeah.
Oh, he was... The two mistakes today were crazy, but just to what Nick said there, it's particularly in the Premier League in terms of teams like repeating and winning titles. I think for Liverpool, because they had that super, they like lost the league by 1 point, didn't they, to City, like that, and that they were unbelievable that season. Then to then win it, that massive high, and then I just think it's so difficult to replicate those levels once you've actually won it. You see it with so many teams who win championships in any sport the following season, trying to keep that momentum, that feeling going. Obviously, they've lost Van Dijk, and he is an absolutely exceptional centre-half that makes them twice as good as what they are. But I don't see the same level. You know, I think both their fullbacks are worse this season. The midfield, the energy seems to be down all over. And I think it's difficult to try and maintain the level once you've reached the top of the mountain. I think City will coast the rest of the season. You know, they've won 4-1 at Anfield without De Bruyne, without Aguero, you know, with, I mean, barely really breaking out of second gear at times. So it's theirs to lose. And it would be nice, as you say, if we can keep sneaking up the rails. I'd like to be sort of in the top four at some point in the next 2-3 weeks, start putting pressure on the other teams around us, because we do have that Tuchel bounce still. And I think that energy that he's given us in terms of him coming in and the new manager and all that kind of stuff gives us a little bit of an edge on some of the teams around us, definitely.
Yeah, I think you're Liverpool and you're Leicester, and you know what is below you, it's going to start getting really, really nervous for those two.
Yeah.
And I think Leicester, frankly, I don't know if they have the horses. Right. You looked at the Wolves game today. It wasn't very good.
They fell away last. Was it last season they fell away as well? They fell away quite badly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be nice if that happens again.
It's again, one of the areas, though, where having a big squad, while it definitely was tough for Frank, as injuries go through, as we still have COVID situations taking place, like, this is not the worst. It has now gone from being a major problem to actually potentially being a decent benefit that we can pull from those resources if we need to. Where, like Sheffield did not fill out a full reserves bench today. Like, that is the reality of the situation here. Obviously, it is an expanded bench, but still, like, that just shows you that, you know, squads are going to struggle, and none of those teams above us, outside of Leicester, have any less matches to play for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. You look at sort of the way that Tuchel has sort of rotated the team. We've almost got 3 to 5 players playing now regularly who really haven't played that much football this season. There isn't that much mileage in the legs on them. So, you know, second half of the season, I think, Alonso's barely kicked the football this season for Chelsea. You know, he's basically fully fit. So, yeah, interesting going into the second half of the season with, you know, people sort of being brought back in a little bit from the cold, but no mileage on the legs, probably not having the accumulated fatigue that we've seen from guys, you know, potentially who have been playing a lot longer, the Masons and others who have been playing beginning part of the season. Could be what we need just to sort of sneak up a little bit on the outside rail. But yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I think that, you know, Dan's right there in terms of the squad size was a little bit of a hindrance, but it could be sort of the secret weapon as we try and close out the season. And in terms of the FA Cup, it would be great to win it this season, because we have, we have history in the competition, but it would be nice to get, certainly for some of the younger players, a kind of title under their belt. So I know it's not maybe as prestigious as what it was, but having a cup win always, I think, is a nice way to sort of bookmark the end of the season, particularly because I don't think we're going to, well, in my head, we can definitely overtake City, but I don't think it's actually going to happen. So,
well, outside of City, who are on blistering form, the second best team in form right now is Brighton, undefeated in their last 5, 3 wins, 2 draws. Outside of them, it's actually Chelsea and West Ham. All right. So we both have 3 wins and a draw in our last 5. So again, that just shows you, even Liverpool, they've lost 3 of their last 5, winning 2. Leicester City have 1-2, drawn 2, lost 1. Same thing with United, 1-2, drawn 2, lost 1.
Look at Southampton, 5 in a row. Cool.
Yeah, which they were knocking around the top 4 as well, and they have plummeted. So this season is wild. I think someone on Twitter, Discord, was like, what a day when you can win and go from 8th to 5th, you know, and technically knocking on the door for higher. So anyways, it's wild. But before we go, we have one last thing to touch on. The brilliant Chelsea women did play today. Quite unfortunately, Dan, I don't know how to say this. I haven't had to say it in a long time. They lost.
Yeah, it's if you were up early enough to watch it and to take it in, it was one of the more infuriating watches of the kind of campaigns that we've seen over the past couple of years. Weird officiating, just odd Telford moment in there too, kind of with some of the goal
Telford.
Action. Telford.
Every time.
Anti-goalkeeper. Yeah. Anti-goalkeeper, Dan.
Always. But yeah, Nick, look, I think the weird thing is just the amount of this just happens to be a thing now. Anytime there's a loss, people just, some people kind of come out of the woodwork and go after players. And like, that is not the type of response required. Like, the type of response required is to rally around the team and, you know that they're going to start another 30 plus game win streak here in the next match.
It's a weird thing. This ahead, it kind of works in journalism as well, and it really frustrates me in that the people making these comments, whether it's inflammatory articles about Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, you know, Reece James, whoever it's going to be, these papers fully know what they're doing in terms of writing the article, writing the headline. They know that it's going to generate clicks. And the thing is, like, you want to call it out because it's the right thing to do, but it gives it publicity. You're just adding gas to the flames. But if you ignore it, then you're ignoring it. And then that's also a bad thing to do. And it's the same with all these sort of weird faceless trolls who attack Reece James, who are attacking Axel Tanzibi, who are attacking, you know, Marcus Rashford, etc. You have to call it out and kind of, you know, call it out for what it is and put a spotlight on these people. But it's kind of what they want as well. It kind of fuels them. And this sort of weird kind of cycle that you get into, both in terms of journalism and articles, some of the stuff written about Marcus Rashford, you know, is insane considering what he's actually done in the UK, particularly over the pandemic period and way, way beyond that. But it's this kind of catch-22 where if you ignore it and you know, hope it goes away, it doesn't, because, you know, people want to call it out and show it, you know, show it for what it is, which is just disgusting and deplorable behaviour. But it's what the people want. It's what the newspapers want. And it's, you know, how do you break that cycle of not giving them attention, but then, you know, telling them that this is absolutely completely wrong? It seems impossible, and it's such a difficult position to be in.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, these women are incredible. Just support them. Like, what are we doing here? Like, if you can't support these guys, then good luck with the men.
They're like, I mean, my God. They're like the most insane team that's playing in the country at the moment. They just, do they win like 30 odd games in a row? I mean, it just doesn't really happen. Well, you're unbeaten for 30 or games or whatever it was. It's just insane.
Victims
just won 6-0 on Wednesday.
Yes.
Victims of their own success is what happens when you set the bar so high. Look, sometimes you just run out of steam. Sometimes you need to stumble so you can get back on. But yeah, look, this team, they're absolutely phenomenal. They are poised to win everything and more so.
They're still top of the league with a game back, in hand on United. Give me a fucking break here. What are we doing?
All right. That's going to wrap us up. Thank you so much, Mr. Joe Tweeds. We appreciate you.
Yeah, cheers, guys. It's been good fun. Maybe not the best game we've ever covered, but it's still interesting nonetheless.
3 points, FC. It's all
3 points,
we can.
Yeah, 3 points is all we come for.
All we can ask for. Nick and Dan, gentlemen, thank you so much. Listeners out there, lots that we covered. I think the big one will be, we want to hear what is your kind of ideal lineup under Tuchel based on what you've seen so far. A lot of conversation around that one. Social media or Discord, best way to do it. But then until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.